We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. Now, as always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. This episode is brought to you by you, of course, you, the members of the Patreon. You keep the lights on over here at Weird News Central, and we appreciate all of your dedication. Are not already and you would like to become a patron of the bullshit arts, then feel free to jump over to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff. But our wonderful patrons can't do it alone. No. We also have some larger sponsors, as we do every episode. But we've only got one this time, one massive sponsor, and that is Festivus. That's right, Festivus. It's another Festivus miracle, and while Festivus is partly about the eschewing of capitalism, there is an element of Festivus that seems, I think, particularly important this year, and that is the airing of grievances, and lacking a table of people to tell what I dislike about them, I'm going to have to focus on how the world has disappointed me this year. And boy, has it ever been a big year for disappointment. As the war in Ukraine continues to exist, despite nobody paying any attention to it, Gaza does continue to annoy centrists by being a clear genocide that they refuse to accept is actually happening. And so we move from the big obvious wars over to some of the elections. Trump took the US presidency again, among a number of disappointing election results, to say the least, around the globe, with the exception of France, who, just when it seemed like they were going to go far right, swung suddenly to the left at the last possible minute, just to prove that they're better than the rest of us, the same way that they refused to go to war in 2001. And everyone else started calling them cowards. So it's just equal parts great and disappointing to be outdone by France again. The world has reached its hottest global average on record, and more once-in-a-lifetime catastrophic weather events have ravaged the landscape for no particular reason that I can think of, certainly not any that would be connected to the previous statement that I just made. I just happen to be doing the weather portion of the grievances, as is traditional. Of course, I liked a lot of movies this year, but this isn't about those. This is about grievances, and boy, do I ever have a grievance, because I still had to endure the cinematic garbage pile that was Madam Web. And while I love The Bear as far as TV shows go, why is this winning best comedy? Like, this, at this point, this is a bit of a lazy take, but why is The Bear winning Best Comedy? Is the quality of the real-world workplace so bad that we look to the high-pressure world of The Bear and think, ooh, what a light-hearted representation of work? Imagine having all of that free time to be able to dip into an existential crisis in the middle of my shift at work. No. Obviously, I save all of my existential breakdowns for the bus ride on the way home. I mean, if I didn't have my existential crisis happening while I was on my over an hour trip home after a 12-hour day of work, I mean, I might risk falling asleep because of exhaustion. So I have to keep it for the ride home, not only so I can meet the KPIs that are required by my work, but for the practical reasons of not falling asleep on the bus. Thus endeth the airing of the grievances. Thank you for allowing me to expunge those. If you have your own grievances that you'd wish, put them in the comments. I'm sure somebody will read them. I won't, but I'm sure somebody will. And of course, none of this, any of this, would not be possible or even be happening without the existence of my own live shows. And boy, do we have a lot of those coming up. So if you are up for a bit of a trip out and coming out to one of the live shows, please do. I've got Wage Against the Machine and I Got Bit by a Monkey Once traveling both shows around, and I am taking them to more locations than ever. So if you happen to be in Perth or Rockingham as part of both the Fringe World Festival and the Rocky Fringe Festival, that's fantastic. Come and check those out. I'll be in Port Augusta, I'll be in Kimber, and I'll be in Adelaide as part of the Adelaide Fringe Festival. I'll be in Mount Gambier in what would have been the Mount Gambier Fringe, but I'm still coming. I'm still bringing my show over to Mount Gambier, so if you're there, and if you're disappointed by the fact that the Fringe doesn't exist this year, come and see my show. I will do my best to fill that gap. And then I'll be jumping straight over to Castlemaine for the Castlemaine Fringe, and Melbourne for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Only the one show this year. It is Wage Against the Machine. I'm literally just doing the one at Chapel Off Chapel, so I'd love to sell that one out. It'd be a really fun one to do. It's a great venue, and I think we'd all really enjoy that show. I will be in Darwin for the Darwin Fringe Festival come July, but again, I'll be filling in some of those gaps that are currently filling in my calendar. If you'd love to have a show come out to your place in Europe and you can get a few people to turn out, I'd be more than happy to come along, but until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So guys, let's start with the headlines. A New South Wales farmer was fined a record $1 million for wiping out critical koala habitat so that they could build a private airstrip larger than Sydney Airport. And that farmer's name was Gladys Berejiklian. No, I'm kidding. Gladys will never see consequences for destroying koala habitats. What a dream, guys. You couldn't really have believed that. Fools. A teenager was told by a chatbot that it sympathized with children who murder their parents after the teen complained to the bot about his limited screen time. Man, if they're upset about limited screen time, these kids are going to be really upset when they find out about their limited job opportunities, houses, dollar value, non-endangered animals, healthy environment, dry land. You know, come to think of it, the only thing this kid will have in abundance is disappointment. If you're wondering, the working nickname for the AI is the Executor, because it will make sure your kids get their inheritance as quickly as possible. In an interview on Triple J, Housing Minister Claire O'Neill said that it's not just young people who want housing prices to drop, and that the government is doing everything that they can. They are committed to helping people bring prices down. Sorry. I almost made it all the way through. But I couldn't finish it. I just couldn't get to the end of the sentence without... I had to let it out, you know what I mean? I was just, I was going to have an aneurysm. I was trying to keep it all in. Of course, that's not what she said. This is what she said.
That may be the view of young people. It's not the view of our government.
Honestly, if these people want an investment that'll just go up infinitely, they should just invest in Raytheon and Halliburton. Yeah? I feel like that's the best thing for them at this point. They've already demonstrated that they don't care for the lives of others. But at least this way, there won't be, like, homeless people as a result of their carelessness. I mean, some people will end up homeless, but they are very far away in countries that we don't live in. And besides, all of those people will eventually be given homes by our very government, right? Sure, those homes will be in detention camps in Nauru, but hey, you don't look a gift house in the mouth, okay? Pete Dutton says that he'll never stand in front of an Aboriginal flag as Prime Minister. And while at first the outburst seemed like it was a bit of a racist, like culture war, gibberish, nonsense statement, it was actually just him letting us know that he's never going to be Prime Minister. He did go on to say that there was a flag that he'd hoped to stand in front of, like a big red one with a kind of like tilted cross motif in the centre. Look, it did sound kind of familiar to me, but I couldn't quite concentrate enough to place it. I guess I'll just have to access my brain for answers so I can assess the knowledge. Honestly, it's right there on the tip of my tongue. You know what? I'm having a totalitarian brain freeze, and I did not see this coming. I think I just need to move on. AI thought knee x-rays could tell if you drink beer and eat refined beans. Yeah, that's right. Sounds great. Sounds like a wonderful AI-led future that we have ahead of us. Have you noticed that AI makes up more shit than doctors in the 16th century? I mean, I can't wait till they start prescribing leeches and bleeding me to balance out my humours, just so that some company somewhere can save 27 cents on having somebody in a third world country answer my phone call. Studies pin down exactly when humans and Neanderthals started doing the nasty in the pasty. And if you want to know all about it, ask your mum and her ex-boyfriend. Ho ho ho! Got him! Actually, that's not fair. Look at this handsome motherfucker. This is the Neanderthal your girlfriend told you not to worry about. Oh, hey there, Chan. You can read all about it in the latest erotic thriller series, Hot Pangean Nights. You know, they don't call them Homo erectus for no reason. Poker machine venues in Victoria have increased the amount of gambling revenue that they're spending on themselves, justifying it as a community benefit to get tax cuts. Look, it makes sense when you realise that these venues are actually providing the community with exactly what they want, a chance to give their money directly to a faceless corporation. People don't happen to know the name of the CEOs of these venues, do they? I'm just asking for a friend and no other particular reason. Victor Willis, who played the police officer in The Village People and one of the songwriters responsible for the song The YMCA, said the gay anthem label is hurting the song. Woo! Hurting the song. I didn't realize hurting meant earning you millions of dollars as a subculture embraces you. If that's the case, I've got a couple of jokes that I think could really do with some hurting as well. I haven't seen someone deny gay people this hard since Qatar hosted the World Cup. Willis has threatened a legal action against anyone referring to the YMCA as a gay anthem. And this is exactly the kind of action that I would expect from a cop. No wonder they wanted to kick cops out of the 2025 Pride Parade. Next, we'll be hearing that there are no macho men hooking up in the Navy. You know the Leatherman would never have pulled this kind of shenanigans. And that's why we don't trust cops. Moving on from the headlines now, onto the bigger news. And first up, it is justice news. Yes. In the criminal justice system, there are two kinds of justice. Working class justice, where the punishments are harsh, the work ethic of the police lacking, and the news coverage minimal, unless it's really gory. And white collar justice, where the punishments are limited, the police ethic varies depending on if they are working for them or against them, and the news coverage is very favourable. So, sometimes we need to make our own justice. Our own Dick Wolf spin-off, Law & Order, Vigilantes Unit. On that note, you undoubtedly have heard about the manhunt that was underway in New York after United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson was assassinated right there on the street at 7 in the morning. I don't think that there has been a shooting victim with less witnesses since Tupac got hit on the Vegas Strip. The suspected national hero, wearing a mask and carrying a grey backpack, fled on foot before mounting an electric bike and riding off into Central Park. The greatest advertising campaign electric bikes are ever going to undergo. United Healthcare is the largest provider of Medicare Advantage Plus in the US and manages health insurance coverage for employers and state and federally funded Medicaid programs. And in the industry, it holds the distinct privilege of being the number one provider of rejections among health insurance providers. Though, truth be told, if you are providing rejections at the highest level, are you actually providing insurance? Or to put it a different way, if a hiker falls in the woods and everybody around calls it a pre-existing condition. Are you actually an insurance provider, or just a vacuum cleaner designed for one purpose? To suck up money. The police have described physical evidence, including a dropped phone and a water bottle that might have been the assassin's, with some DNA on it. Photos of a man who is definitely not the vigilante in question, but will probably end up being the man hauled in for questioning and made an example of. And some bullet casings that had the words deny, delay, depose written on them. A reference to the company's unofficial method of handling claims made for the millions of Americans who paid billions of dollars into the system with the admittedly wild expectation that one day the company might do what they were paid to do rather than attempt to stack cash higher than the Burj Khalifa. Normally, when a high-profile death like this happens, internet sleuths are desperate to milk it for views. Truthfully, it doesn't even have to be high profile. They normally hunt down someone who stepped on a snail if they believed in it enough, so that they can show the world just how clever they are and how few friends they have by solving the case. Finding Wally and doxing Carmen Sandiego all in one afternoon. However, the online sleuth community are being proper champions of the people this time by saying that they won't help find the CEO killer, who the internet has started calling the Adjuster, a name that lends itself quite nicely to an upcoming HBO series possibly starring Jeremy Allen White. Not because he looks like the guy, but after Shameless and The Bear, he is the only millionaire that we will accept as portraying a proper working class hero. Plus, apparently he's really funny. Yeah, big award winner for comedy. Thompson's killing has sparked online praise from people angry over the state of the US healthcare. Tens of thousands of people have expressed support on social media for the killing or sympathized with it, some even celebrating the death. And who could blame them, really? No one at that company would lift a finger unless it drove shareholder value, and that was driven by the people at the top. It's bad enough that the cops turn to citizen sleuths to do their job for free, ever. But in the first strike of what will be remembered as the beginning of the class war, not a damn person should be doing police work, let alone doing it for free. Those class traitors can do their dirty work on their own. They get paid well enough to do it. Trust me. Speaking of well paid, Andrew Witty, the $25 million a year earning CEO of United Health Group, the parent company of United Healthcare, jumped in on a Zoom call to address the company, asking everyone to grab the boot that they've been mailed and start licking vigorously.
I encourage you to tune out that critical noise that we're hearing right now. It does not reflect reality.
This guy really puts the deny portion in deny, delay, depose. He isn't just denying your healthcare, he's denying your reality, because you know their motto, whatever doesn't kill you makes us richer. And sometimes, if it does kill you, it still makes us richer. If this isn't a true reality, how does Witty explain what is happening here?
It is simply a sign of an era in which we live.
Oh, accidentally telling the truth for once, that's rare. This is a sign of the era in which we live. The working class has officially entered its not fucking around anymore era. No more flirting with consequences. It's the American remake of the French Revolution we've all been waiting for. And if this all seems glib to you, remember the meeting that this guy was shot attending still happened on time, even though Witty claimed...
And there are very few people in the history of the US healthcare industry who had a bigger positive effect on American healthcare than Brian. And we are going to make sure that we not only acknowledge and honor that legacy of Brian, but we will continue it.
And what better way to honor the legacy of Brian Thompson than by doing the thing that he loved best, fucking over the poor. Man was dying in the street, and they didn't even delay the shareholder meeting. Because that's not what Brian would have wanted, okay? If a poor family wasn't turned away from receiving health insurance every hour on the hour, Brian felt like he wasn't doing his job, so we needed to keep this continuity of lack of service going. They even managed to put an advertisement for his position up before the day was out. I guess that was one of the things that they discussed in the shareholder meeting. Well, now it makes sense why they had to like plow through and keep it going despite a man bleeding on the street to death. It's what Brian would have wanted. The rejections must flow! Because we're a family here at United Healthcare. And like any family, if one of us dies, we start putting in preparations to replace them immediately. We get any couples in the family to start fucking straight away because we need a consistency. We need a continuance of lack of service. I will note though that when delivering his merry message on media suppression, Witty was sure to attend via Zoom. Brian wasn't so important that Witty would risk his own life attending a meeting in person, not when it could be a video mail. No. Maybe your workers were right when they said it's not necessary to have people show up for meetings in person when they could come in on a Zoom call. Now, is it? Surely, this has been a wake-up call about the behaviour of these callous companies. So what have we learned?
The United Healthcare CEO's death is shining a light on security and how companies protect their leadership.
Ooh, it turns out those who advise companies on security issues have some thoughts on this whole good guys with a gun story. They say they have an even gooder guy with a gun and claim threats against executives are rising. Well, what could possibly be causing a rise in threats against CEOs during a cost of living crisis? Is something inherently wrong with the system, or is it something else? Must be something else. They claim the rising threats are fueled by social media, forgetting America designed a system where the optimal path is considered the one that hurts the most people. Well, sorry, correction, the most poor people. Whew. That was nearly embarrassing. I almost made a fool of myself. Whew. Because, as we've seen, when one of their own suffers violence, they freak out about how they are being treated unfairly. Won't somebody please think of the CEOs? At this point, if you aren't feeling like we need to tear down the system, you're either profiting from it, are immoral, or you might be a little bit stupid. I would offer these CEOs my thoughts and prayers, but I checked and it turns out they aren't in network. Sorry, guys. I'm hearing a lot of people's health insurance doesn't include vision coverage, so I suppose that means a lot of people wouldn't possibly have been able to see a thing if they were out on the street that morning. Although, let's be frank, this is gun violence. And if we've learned anything from the past, gun violence in America? Well, it's still too early to talk about the politics of stopping CEO deaths, and I won't be dragged in to politicizing this. The NYPD was getting pretty desperate because the only thing that they'd managed to find was a bag in Central Park. A bag that was quite delightfully stuffed with Monopoly money. Notably missing from the Monopoly collection was the get out of jail free card. So let's hope that the CEO shooter has held onto that tightly. And all this nothingness is happening despite the NYPD offering up $10,000 for any information. Although, in the end, they may not need to offer up any money because the NYPD does say that AI will find the adjuster. That's right. Yeah, what does that... Does that sound good? The adjuster. Only available on FXX. I'd watch that. You know, if the NYPD really wanted people to help them out, they would be a little more cleverer about this. Instead of offering up $10,000 in cash, they'd offer up something that would really get you to turn on your own class. Maybe offer up a reward of 10,000 GP visits for free. CNN has also reported that the NYPD is using facial recognition software to track down The Adjuster Tuesdays on AMC. Yeah, yeah, I think AI, that bastion of unimpeachable perfect work, will get the job done. So remember, listeners, to keep an eye out for a handsome man with a charming smile, forearms, fingers that merge seamlessly into his face and legs, three and a bit legs, less a man and more a multitude, really. We are legion because we are many. He is legion because he is made up of many, many body parts, that is. Many excessive body parts. Oh, breaking news, guys, breaking news. The Adjuster has been found. Maybe. Possibly. But maybe not. But maybe. But who knows? Following a days-long search across state lines for the alleged shooter, a young man matching the description of the shooter, who goes by the name Luigi Mangione, has been found. They want us to believe that these guys are the same guys. Look at them. Look at these guys. They don't look anything alike. On his person, they claim to have found a ghost gun, a large sum of cash, a mask, and writings that they are claiming to be a manifesto. We have an audio sample of some of the manifesto being read.
Chicken!
Luigi was arrested while eating at a McDonald's restaurant in Altoona, Pennsylvania, after a McDonald's worker recognized him from CCTV images circulated to the media. The McDonald's was flooded with review bombs saying wonderful things like, "More like Narc-Donald's. I hope obesity and heart disease are in network in Pennsylvania. Deny, depend, depose, diarrhea. And do not stop here if you're an American hero, they will sell you out." Others claim to have seen a rat in the restaurant, noting that it will make you sick and your insurance isn't going to cover it. So just delightful reviews overall. So the only question that remains is, which of the McDonald Land cast is the biggest snitch? While Officer Big Mac seems the most obvious choice, as he is simply a propaganda-spreading class traitor, we all know that Mayor McCheese got rolled in 1985, the McDonald Land election, after he was found with his hand in the nugget box, claimed the election was stolen, and then ran up millions in bills and false lawsuits to prove that he had been screwed by the McDonald Land electoral system, and now he desperately needs money. But I think we're all overlooking one very important figure. The horrific moon-faced crooner, who also helped McDonald's become a 24-hour institution in the 80s and 90s, who came into public shame when Bobby Darin's son sued McDonald's after allegedly infringing on Darin's likeness. Yes, it is Mac Tonight. And of course, there was the basement full of headless nuggets that he had to answer to. That certainly didn't help his public reputation, and someone like that might have desperately needed a few $1,000s to help them boost his post-nugget basement career. But who could say? There's always Grimace. Grimace has been hanging out with shady characters like Donald Trump for years. The internet did its thing, and quickly, we are seeing a Burger King tweet where Burger King claimed, "We don't snitch," which was very delightful but quickly proven to be fake, though very funny, though very fake. After all, as if we could rely on someone who called themselves a king to have class solidarity with the working class. Assuming he is guilty though, he was from a rich family, went to a fancy private school that costs around $40,000 per year. If he had just waited a few years, he could have gotten a job and kept working as a data engineer, then he could have gotten a job with a social media company and killed a bunch of people legally. Why would he have wasted that opportunity by going out of his way to kill a CEO now? You better believe he wouldn't be facing criminal charges if he'd gone about murdering that way. Moving on to social media news. So here in Australia, the government is desperately trying to prove that they have done something worth voting them back in for. Their latest in a series of good-sounding, minimally impactful, but memeable gestures is the under-16 social media ban. in a radical attempt to stop children from being able to speak to each other and eventually turn into Greens voters, the federal parliament has passed legislation to ban people under 16 from having an account with some social media platforms. One of the strictest social media crackdowns in the world, though it does not name specific platforms which would be subject to the ban, which, given the speed social media company owners are destroying their own company's public reputations through allowing it to be popularized by white supremacists, crypto scammers, bots, or trying to develop the metaverse.
There's one more feature coming soon that's probably the most requested feature on our roadmap. Legs.
What are you doing, Mark? Even white supremacists want legs, Zuckerberg. Presumably, they'll be able to use them to reenact their favorite scenes from American History X when the platform gets overrun. While it remains unclear exactly which social media platforms will be subject to the ban, those that are will face fines of up to $50 million if they don't take reasonable steps to stop under 16s from having accounts. Reasonable steps. Sounds like the kind of vague nothingness that allows governments to look good as social media sites install a button saying, I pinky promise, cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, I am definitely, probably, almost certainly over 16 years old, sir. Then, if they really want them to show that they are being serious, maybe they'll get them to do like a blood donation to the nearest billionaire in order to help keep them young, because only young people will be able to keep them young. The legislation defines an age-restricted social media platform as including services where the sole purpose or the significant purpose is to enable online social interaction between people. People can link to or interact with others on the service. People can post material, or it falls under conditions as set out in the legislation, which, based on these descriptions, no social media platforms would actually be banned. They've come way too late in the game for social media interaction to be the main or even a significant purpose of any of these sites. Nobody wants to talk to anybody else there. They just want to post their own memes or, you know, expel their own political views or their own political view memes. For the sites themselves, they're simply data mines that sell other companies your data, so that's not really facilitating communication in any way. And for the users, they're just a way of stalking the few people who are still foolish enough to be on there, or preaching your opinions and driving away those who don't agree with you so that you can curate a media bubble. These are the least social of interactions that humanity has ever created or ever had offered to them. Some of my listeners might not even remember that back in 2017, the government banned pirating websites in a very similar fashion. And look, technically, they do remain banned to this day. But a friend of mine and his illegally pirated copy of every TV show and movie that has been made in the last 5 years has some serious concerns over the government's ability to not only carry out the ban of children on social media in the first place, but more importantly, once the election passes and their fervor for, oh please won't somebody think of the children, is no longer the political flavor of the month, but instead a distant memory of Australia's past, like, say, for example, prime ministers eating raw onions, or disappearing into the ocean, or progressive policies that help people. When was the last time that you heard about the government talking about the scourge of online piracy? Think about it. I'll give you a minute, because they don't do it anymore. No. These days, the major scourges are, what have we got? Shoplifting, protesting, the increasing interest in voting for the Greens, right? Nobody talks about piracy anymore. You can tell they really needed to jam it through without the rest of us consenting, as the bill had a 1 day public consultation period and they voted on it before anyone could possibly have read all the submissions. Completely ignoring the advice of experts and from the Australian Human Rights Commission, which said the government rushed the legislation through Parliament, quote, without taking the time to get the details right, or even knowing how the ban will work in practice. Without giving too many of my country's secrets away, the Australian government ignoring the advice of the Human Rights Commission is pretty much par for the course, so we shouldn't be surprised there. Though, our usual response is to completely violate people's human rights, so simply ignoring a Human Rights Commission is actually a real step up for us. Talk about progress! The government introduced the bill, they claim, due to major concerns about the mental health effects of social media on young people. And when it passed, the Albanese government celebrated, posting on Twitter, "We're doing everything we can to keep our kids safe." For starters, a huge ball drop by the social media team. The post should have read, "In a year's time, your children won't be able to see this post." Fucking, it was right there. Yeah, these guys suck at social media. Given that keeping the kids safe at all costs is the goal, presumably they'll be rushing through a few other things that are arguably more detrimental to the mental health of children. Life stresses are a big one. Things like poverty. Poverty is a huge detriment to the mental health of children. I think we need to rush through a universal basic income to guarantee children don't suffer from poverty-induced mental health. We don't need the details, we just need to rush it through. One day, nobody discuss it, just push it right through. Another big one is people dying. So, no more death, I guess? Sorry if you were hoping to shuffle off this mortal coil, maybe getting out of a terrible job that you don't want to do anymore by simply dying. That's off the cards now. Same with divorce. We're done. No more divorces, you hear me? Divorce is a huge driver of mental health problems with children, though forcing parents to stay together might increase some parental depression, so we'll have to take this on a case-by-case basis, maybe making bigamy legal for some relationships that are less happy, so that cheating becomes a thing of the past. But everyone's gonna have to get real cool about a whole bunch of stuff real fast. Particularly as Dr. Alexia Maddox, Director of Digital Education and Senior Lecturer in Pedagogy and Education Futures at La Trobe University School of Education, or Dr. Maddox, if you're feeling nasty, said, "Research shows that social media platforms often provide crucial support networks for young people in rural and regional areas, LGBTQIA+ youth, and those with disabilities." I think it's a pretty clear indicator of how dire things are out there when there is a group whose best source of support is the bubbling cesspool of social media. Possibly the only thing that is worse could be, say, your grandparents relying on Sky News to shape their entire worldview. If we're worried about media corrupting people in such a way that children get hurt, then definitely Sky News has done more harm to the mental health of not only children who have to live in a world shaped by Sky News' wretched opinion-slinging, culture war-mongering shit show, but their parents and their grandparents, who have been gently human-centipeding the opinions of Murdoch journalists through the generations and directly into the mouths of their children for way too long now. Maybe to save their mental health, we have to ban the country from Murdoch journalism. After all, aren't we concerned about the mental health of children? We don't even know how any of this is going to be enforced. And even though in an explanatory memorandum the government wrote that no Australian will be forced to use government identification, including a digital ID, for age assurance on social media, a trial of age verification technology will not deliver its findings to the federal government until 6 months from now, and that age-restricted social media platforms can only collect government-issued identification information or material if other alternative age assurance methods have been provided to users. So it's a good thing that social media companies have proven themselves so reliable and trustworthy, not only with our data, but ensuring that they don't take any more than they actually need, and they certainly wouldn't sell it off to any potentially interested parties for their own personal gain. Perhaps most concerning, our old friend Dr. Maddox said restricting children from social media will increase the likelihood that young people would be pushed toward less regulated platforms. Places where some of the worst behaviors have not only been encouraged, but covered up. Terrible places like Telegram, 8chan, and a coalition WhatsApp group. And as social media platforms will no longer need to be made safe for children, the formerly regulated platforms, well, they'll start to undergo some rather disturbing transformations. If you think Twitter is bad now, wait until they aren't expected to regulate for teenagers anymore. Realistically, the only option left, a place so devoid of genuine personality that every post is a post about pizza parties, or even worse, a job posting. That's right. The only option left is LinkedIn. And guess what? Even LinkedIn says that they're too boring for kids to be included in the social media ban. And I think I agree. I almost fell asleep reading about this. And this is the funniest thing LinkedIn has ever done. Children won't need to be banned from LinkedIn because they'll never go there. Adults don't even want to be on LinkedIn. It's what social media would look like if corporations ruled the world. So have at it, LinkedIn. Go nuts, sharing posts about how you attended 40 pizza parties this quarter and how they synergize with your bowels to optimize your workflow by reducing the amount of toilet breaks that you need to take due to extreme constipation. Do it. Tell everybody. Moving on now, it's puberty news. It's over to the UK, the home of fucking around with pronouns. A country where we refers to one person and one is two separate entities. And they claim that they invented the language. Sure wish they'd learn how to use it. But for some reason, a person changing his pronouns from he, him to we, one at 70 makes a certain group of people freak out a lot less than a small percentage of the population wanting different pronouns, ones that a lot of other people use. And as a result of this general confusion and anger, Labour has announced puberty blockers for under 18s with gender dysphoria will be banned indefinitely across the UK, except for use in clinical trials. For those who aren't sure, puberty blockers are given by injection to youth experiencing gender dysphoria, where a person's gender identity does not match the sex that they were assigned at birth. The medications block physical changes such as breast development due to estrogen or a deepening voice from testosterone. The astute listeners among you have noticed that these are all things that start to happen as a result of puberty. Good work, listeners. This may seem extreme, but and this may surprise some of my listeners, but I will say, I agree. Look, don't get me wrong. I understand why people want to do it, but delaying puberty is a big decision, okay? It's one that I don't think you should be able to make until after puberty, you know, when you've matured. Like the rest of us, you can discover who you are and what you want to be after you've turned into a person that you hate. There are certainly many fathers whose advice to their children is, look, no dating until after you get married. They're often fans of God and Jesus, and to be fair to them, Mary did get pregnant before she'd had sex. So I can see how they developed that mindset. So I know that it's disappointing to hear, but I think that's where I've landed on all this. This is all due to a report known as the CAS Review. Since its release, the review has been used to justify restrictions on healthcare for transgender youth in the UK and has already been cited in US legal battles over the transgender rights. It is likely to feature heavily in the months and years to come, as it says a lot of the things that the people who want to deny trans kids gender-affirming care want to hear. Things like, toy preference in childhood is biological and caused by hormones, and that neurodivergent individuals shouldn't be allowed to transition. Despite research showing that there is an incredibly strong overlap between trans identity and neurodivergency. A very sneaky attempt to remove their bodily autonomy. Don't think we didn't catch you there. Because you see, they can't be trusted to understand themselves. After all, autistic people have difficulties with social communication and peer relationships, which may make it difficult for them to feel accepted and fit in anywhere. So obviously the solution to feeling awkward in society is drastic body altering surgery, preceded by outwardly expressing a gender identity different to what society might expect. Maybe wear some gender bending outfits, cut or grow your hair, all in the middle of puberty, a period where almost everyone is already feeling awkward about their own changing body, and the worst of us are looking to lash out at others to distract from their own insecurities. Yeah. Teaching others to draw unnecessary attention to those trying to be their true selves and make them feel like their choices are fundamentally wrong, that'll definitely solve the whole fitting in problem. Sure, that'll take care of it. Toot sweet. Mark my words. This report will be the vaccines cause autism of gender-affirming care, in that it does more harm than good, spreads misinformation, and people are going to cite this for years despite it being fundamentally wrong, and conservatives will use it to prop up their views, also making it the Margaret Thatcher of government reports. Got it! Moving the age to 18 is unthinkable. The average age that a youth assigned female at birth starts puberty is around 10, while those assigned male typically start at 11. If you deprive someone of blockers until they're 18, you have made an irreversible decision by forcing a child to go through puberty and forcing them to have bodily changes that they're not interested in at all. It's kind of like if Optimus Prime could only transform into the Cybertruck. Nobody is interested in that. The review says social transitioning for those who aren't sure, that is, changing physical appearance, so maybe a haircut or clothing, you know, pronouns, basic things. Little things that hurt absolutely nobody, but do a great deal for the mental health of the child. The review says these small acts should not be done without some form of clinical involvement. Sorry, what? So if my boy wants to grow their hair long, or if my girl wants to cut their hair short, I need to consult a doctor first? That's the kind of thing that I'd expect from the American healthcare system, not the NHS. Even if it is slightly declining in recent years. If they're going to insist that trans kids get no gender-affirming social interaction, then it's only fair we treat all kids the same. No gender-affirming haircuts or clothes for anybody. You understand? All children will be either shaved bald so that we remove all possibility of gender bias, or they will get a bowl cut to maintain a permanent state of gender ambiguity. And to keep them from dressing in any particular gender style, they'll need to start to wear either shapeless potato sacks or those futuristic onesie uniforms that science fiction movies from the 80s and 90s dressed future societies in. Although, ironically, trans women, through this excessive oppression, we'll actually be getting a true taste of the female experience, as they will have a bunch of men making judgment calls about what they can and can't do with their bodies. So ironically, they will be gender-affirming trans women. And I'm sure that women the world over would say, welcome to the sisterhood. That is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for hanging around. If you enjoyed that, if you enjoyed any of that, please do share it with someone you think might also be into that kind of thing. And I really appreciate your time and making it all the way through to the end. If you do, as I said, want to come out to one of the live shows, I would genuinely appreciate that. Do come out. Don't be afraid to say hello at the end. Let me know that you found the show because of the podcast or vice versa. And it would be nice to have a little chat. But I appreciate you being here. I appreciate your time. Feel free to either come to the shows or join up with the Patreon or not. I'm not your mum. Until then, till next time, see you later. Bye.